What if everything you know about the world is backwards? For centuries, philosophers assumed that knowledge meant conforming our minds to reality, like a mirror reflecting what's truly there. Then came Immanuel Kant with a radical proposal. Perhaps objects must conform to our minds, not the other way around. This wasn't philosophical wordplay. It was a revolution that would reshape how we understand everything from Einstein's relativity to why we can't help but see the world through cause and effect. Kant's insight cuts to the heart of what it means to be human. We don't just observe reality, we actively construct it, moment by moment, without even realizing it. Try imagining an object existing nowhere, or an event happening at no particular time. Impossible. Space and time aren't out there, they're frameworks your mind imposes on every experience. Kant called these forms of intuition the operating system running beneath conscious awareness. When you see a coffee cup, its spatial location and temporal presence come from your mind, not the cup itself. Raw sensory data gets automatically organized into spatial and temporal patterns before you're aware of perceiving anything. This solves an ancient puzzle. Why does mathematics describe the physical world so perfectly? Because geometry explores the structure of our own spatial intuition. We map our mind's architecture, then project it onto the world. Kant discovered we can never access things in themselves, reality independent of observers. We only encounter reality filtered through human cognition's necessary structures. You're not a passive observer, you're a co-creator of the world you experience. When one billiard ball strikes another, you automatically perceive causation, not just colors moving. This reveals Kant's profound insight. Your mind comes equipped with 12 fundamental concepts, categories, that organize raw sensation into coherent experience. These include unity and plurality, reality and negation, substance and causation, possibility and necessity. They're like file folders, automatically sorting incoming data before conscious processing. What makes this revolutionary? These concepts aren't learned from experience. They make experience possible. When a child watches a magician make a rabbit disappear, she assumes there's a hidden explanation. Never concluding objects can vanish without cause. This reveals how deeply causality structures human thinking. David Hume argued causation is just habit. We see events repeatedly conjoined and expect the pattern to continue. Kant showed Hume missed something crucial. While specific causal relationships are learned, the concept of causation must precede experience. Without already possessing this concept, you couldn't interpret observations as showing causal relationships, just disconnected sensations. But these categories only apply within possible experience. When philosophers use them beyond experience, to prove God's existence or determine whether the universe had a beginning, they fall into contradictions. It's like using a thermometer to measure color. This explains why metaphysical debates seem endless. They involve applying concepts beyond their proper domain, where they lose their grip on reality. Right now, you're seeing these words, hearing background noise, feeling your seat's pressure, remembering previous sentences, and anticipating what's next. All these disparate elements feel like they're happening to one unified you. Kant's explanation of this unity revolutionized how we understand consciousness. He called it the synthetic unity of apperception, the I think, that accompanies all your representations. This isn't something you observe. It's the condition that makes experience possible as your experience. Like distinct movie frames becoming continuous story, consciousness weaves scattered perceptions into unified experience. Kant inverted traditional thinking about self. Most philosophers assumed you start with a substantial self, a soul or ego, that then has experiences. Kant showed it works backwards. The unity of consciousness constitutes the self. The I emerges through unifying experiences. You don't have a self that perceives. Perceiving in a unified way creates the sense of self. This has a strange implication. You can never know your true self. You only encounter the I as it appears while organizing experience, never as it exists in itself. It's like trying to see your own eyes without a mirror. The organ of vision can't become its own object. This explains why objective experience requires a unified subject. For something to be an object for you, you must recognize it as part of your continuous consciousness. When you see a tree, you synthesize isolated sensations into a unified object within your ongoing experience. Ever wondered if the universe had a beginning or has always existed? Whether you have free will or everything is determined? Kant argued these questions reveal something fundamental about human reason. Reason naturally seeks the unconditioned, the ultimate explanation needing no further explanation. This drive produces three great ideas: the soul, the world, and God.
Problems arise when we mistake these regulative ideas, which should guide inquiry, for constitutive principles that determine actual objects.
This creates transcendental illusion, the belief we can know things beyond all possible experience. Consider Kant's famous antinomies, pairs of contradictory arguments that seem equally valid. Can we prove the universe had a beginning?
Yes, an infinite elapsed time is impossible to complete.
Can we prove it had no beginning?
Yes, any beginning moment requires a prior time.
Both make the same error, treating the world as a thing in itself rather than appearance. The freedom versus determinism antinomy reveals a powerful solution. Both can be true if we distinguish phenomena, where everything is determined, from noumena, where freedom might exist.
You are simultaneously a natural being subject to causation and a moral agent capable of free choice.
Kant dismantled traditional proofs for God's existence. The ontological argument fails because existence isn't a property. The cosmological secretly depends on the ontological. The design argument establishes at most a cosmic architect, not a creator.
Yet these ideas gain new significance in moral reasoning.
We can't prove God exists, but morality requires us to act as if the highest good is achievable, which presupposes God and immortality.
If pure reason can't answer life's biggest questions, where does that leave us?
Not in despair, but in honest relationship with knowledge.
Kant's discipline of pure reason establishes boundaries not to restrict inquiry, but to prevent wasted effort pursuing impossible goals.
Philosophy differs fundamentally from mathematics. A mathematician constructs a triangle in pure intuition, perfectly matching concept to object.
A philosopher analyzing substance or cause has no such recourse. These concepts can only be analyzed through thought, never constructed.
This explains why mathematics progresses steadily while metaphysics remains mired in endless debates.
When metaphysical systems conflict, materialists claiming everything is matter, spiritualists claiming reality is fundamentally mental, don't hastily choose sides.
Both overreach by applying categories beyond possible experience.
Kant distinguished theoretical from practical reason.
While theoretical reason reaches its limits in questions about God, freedom, and immortality, practical reason, reason guiding action, offers a different path.
The moral law becomes the foundation for practical beliefs that theoretical reason cannot disprove.
When you act ethically, despite personal cost, you implicitly affirm that doing right matters ultimately.
This threads a middle path between dogmatism and skepticism.
Kant launched a Copernican revolution in philosophy. Just as Copernicus showed Earth revolves around the Sun, Kant demonstrated that objects must conform to our cognition rather than our cognition to objects.
This fundamentally changed how we think about thinking itself.
The impact rippled everywhere.
Einstein acknowledged Kant's insights about space and time influenced relativity theory.
Psychology inherited his analysis of the mind's structuring activities.
Political theory embraced his emphasis on human dignity and autonomy.
Even his critics, Hegel, Nietzsche, and countless others, define themselves through their responses to Kant.
His core insight remains radical. The world you experience is partly your own creation.
Your mind doesn't passively receive information, but actively structures experience according to principles that make knowledge possible.
You're not a spectator observing reality from outside, but a participant whose very presence shapes what appears.
In our age of artificial intelligence and virtual reality, his insights feel prophetic.
As we build machines that perceive and reason, we confront his questions. What are the necessary conditions for any possible experience?
What makes knowledge knowledge rather than mere information?
What does it mean to be a thinking subject rather than a processing system?